once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, January 6th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as we kick off a new week on the program. One guest with me for the full show, that is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com. We'll talk LendingTree Bowl, we'll talk national championship, then we'll talk a whole lot of college basketball here on today's show. And of course, we'll separate those segments as I always do for our listeners out there. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Thoughts going up today on the divisional round for the four playoff games coming up here on Saturday and Sunday. Opening line report already up for the divisional round. Daily college basketball and NBA stuff. Tennis season is back. Big Ten Watto back with another tennis preview for us. James Mazzola back on the golf side with a preview of last week's Tournament of Champions. Now we look ahead to the Sony Open in Hawaii. Daily NHL from Parker Michaels. I started my Major League Baseball season win total guide intros this past weekend. Plenty of stuff going on over at bangthebook.com. Make sure you check it all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest on the program here today, and that is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
It's going all right. How about yourself?
Doing very well, man. Appreciate your time as always here, sir. And we don't talk a whole lot of NFL, but you and I were kind of doing that a little bit here before we started up the show today. Any surprises for you coming out of the wild card weekend?
I was certainly surprised that the Saints lost to the Vikings. You know, probably it's been a little bit more of a narrative than it should be that Kirk Cousins struggles in the big games. But, you know, he has lost a lot of games, you know, in the spotlight. Vikings are a talented team. You know, it shouldn't be a huge surprise, I guess. But, you know, between the Saints losing at home and the Patriots losing at home, I thought those were both pretty big surprises.
Yeah, I think something that was really surprising to me about a couple of games, and we'll talk about this a lot on tomorrow's show with Brian Blessing, but, you know, Bill O'Brien coached a very poor first half, and they were still in the game. The Bills couldn't capitalize on a lot of their opportunities. Deshaun Watson finally started making plays in the second half, but Sean McDermott's clock management was abysmal in the second half of that game. Yep. We talked about the Saints getting beaten. Sean Payton, I have no idea what in the hell that guy was thinking. But his second half was not a coaching display worthy of remembering either. That was the big thing. You know, we had some very exciting games. We had a couple of overtime games. But what really stands out to me is the unpredictability of betting the NFL, because these coaches and their bad decisions are having such a profound impact on these games that even the good teams are very tough to trust with some of these decision makers.
Yeah, you know, the Texans and Bills, I saw most of that game. And I was kind of struck by, in the first half, like you said, just about everybody on my timeline on Twitter was talking about O'Brien and how bad of a coach he is, and the Bills have a big coaching advantage. And then the second half rolls around, it's like, you know, so much for the Bills' big coaching advantage, because he is really struggling. And at the end of that game, there were just some really confusing things going on in that game. Obviously, Josh Allen pitching the ball behind him. I'll remember that one for a while. It was kind of like when wasn't it Reggie Bush that did that in the title game for USC? Just some strange plays. You know, Allen makes some great plays and also makes some very questionable plays. And then obviously Watson with the big play to be able to stay up and then get the big gainer. You know, I really don't think Houston or Buffalo really played very well in that game. And it was really, for the most part, it was kind of an ugly game. But then, you know, the finish was exciting, certainly. And then, you know, I have to say one more time, and I'm sure I've said this before, but I don't like the NFL's overtime rules. I really want both teams to get the ball. Would have been nice to see the Saints get the ball and see if Breeze and the Saints could score. I don't think it's quite right for it to be decided on a coin toss.
No, definitely not. And especially, you know, with some of the creative offenses that we have out there in the NFL now, you know, yards per play numbers are much higher now than they were 5, 10, 15 years ago. Both teams deserve a shot with the ball. I absolutely agree with that sentiment. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, obviously we saw, you know, a change come with the pass interference rules because of what happened in the Saints game. Do we see a change come next year with overtime because of something that happened in a Saints game? And look, I mean, no team runs worse in the NFL playoffs than the poor Saints, who, you know, may have deserved a better fate yesterday, may have deserved a better fate a few times here over the last few years. But, you know, as we transition over to the college football side of things here, and we've got one bowl game to talk about, the Lending Tree Bowl, one game other than that, the national championship game, at least as far as FBS goes. You know, I know it's been a rough stretch for you here lately. It was a very rough stretch for me throughout most of 2019 and for a lot of people as well. And we don't have any big coaching mismatches or anything in these two college football games this weekend. We've certainly had some during the bowl season, and a lot of times those really haven't played out as I expected them to. One of my New Year's resolutions on the betting side for 2020 may just be to assume that all coaches suck from a game management and a game theory standpoint, unless it's something where it is a very clear, very evident mismatch, because betting these markets is hard enough as it is. And with some of the unquantifiable things, motivation, you know, coaching advantages, stuff like that, I've fallen on the wrong side of them here. And I'm really not sure what to do about that.
Yeah, I have to say that, you know, I've had a really, really bad stretch here, especially in college basketball of late. You know, it's definitely something I'm beating myself up over. You know, it's I put a lot of time into it and definitely disappointed when I do so poorly, especially for people who have bought from me. College football, I had a good year. You know, I have gotten a little bit of negativity about college football just because I lost the last three games. You know, I lost a couple on New Year's Day, but a 75-60 in college football this year, so 55.6%. You know, regardless of what happens in the last game, I've had a good year. I wish it would have finished a little bit stronger. I didn't do very well in bowl season, but, you know, I think in bowl season, I didn't quite go against the public enough. I also took too many of those teams that seemed to have a motivation edge and didn't actually, you know, come to fruition out on the field. The SMU game really stands out to me when I think about bowl season, but, you know, I think that you're right that there are so many poor coaching decisions now that it's hard to know who has the coaching advantage sometimes. Obviously, still, we know in some cases that some coaches are really good as underdogs or some coaches are, you know, really bad in certain spots. And I think that will work going forward. But it's important to point out for listeners that, you know, regardless of how much of an edge you have in this, you're going to have really bad stretches. So, you know, for yourself and for myself too, you know, this is something that, you know, we should understand that this will happen from time to time. It's just not very easy when you're in the middle of it.
Yeah, definitely. And again, I mean, it's tough because I feel like, and maybe this is just some recency bias from the bowl season, especially some of the games very early on in the bowl season, it feels like a lot of things I've lost have been, you know, because of intangibles or something that, you know, maybe happened that I didn't expect to happen. For example, I had a terrible baseball season. Anybody who read my daily article knows that. I had no idea, and I got buried very early on in the year with that, by the way. I had no idea how the baseball was going to play this year. I had no idea that home runs were going to absolutely skyrocket. You know, I wrote up the Baltimore Orioles intro, and obviously we're going kind of down a rabbit hole here, but I wrote up the Baltimore Orioles intro, and, you know, I remember that they set the all-time baseball record for most home runs allowed as a pitching staff. I forgot that it happened on August 22nd, you know, and not only that, but four teams wound up breaking the old record of home runs allowed in a season. I had no idea that was coming going into the year, you know, and I got buried so early on with a really bad start to the season in March and then a bad month of April. It was very hard to try and come back from that, even making adjustments to the baseball. I think here in the college football season, you think you've got motivation. You think you've got, you know, these coaching mismatches, you think you've got these situations maybe with interims or where you're not sure if a team's going to play for a coach that's likely to take another job, something like that. You know, you're guessing. It's guesswork at that point in time. And that's the problem with this business, because the talent pool is spread so evenly across so many of these conferences, so many of these regions where you really want to look statistically as much as you possibly can. The lines are pretty tight in that regard these days. So you try to find these intangible factors, these situational spots, these things that you believe to be true, when they wind up not being true, you look like a gigantic asshole. And that's something that's happened to me way too much here in 2019. And again, maybe we just have to bet based on what is literally and definitively in front of us.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that the one that stands out to me is the whole interim coach thing. You know, I think that's used too much now. I mean, because we've seen enough examples of this that it must just be a coin flip. You know, I mean, this is, you know, it's been long enough now that it's been used as a big reason to bet against the team. But we've seen plenty of interim coaches who have done fine. You know, it just depends on if the players are want to play. And unless you're inside that locker room, you don't really know. So I think some of the narratives that go around, we kind of have to overlook those at this point, because it clearly isn't anything that gives you a quantifiable edge. So let's try to see what will allow us to have an edge, because, you know, some of those things that we have thought in the past, other people have thought in the past might be an edge. It's not the case, you know, and if we get enough data to show us that, then I think it's time to move on from stuff like that. So that's one thing I'm going to do in the future, is kind of block those things out and, you know, let somebody else talk about that and maybe move the line in the other team's favor, because I think that there have been multiple things like that have stood out as, you know, it doesn't really matter now. Now, I agree with you when it comes to Major League Baseball, with the whole baseball and everybody's giving up home runs. Some of the guys that hit just a ton of home runs this year would have never seen that coming. And you know, also hurt me early on when you're taking some of these unders and it's just everything's flying out of the park and you're like, what is going on? And obviously just, you know, the baseball was so much different. And it's hard when you assume that things are going to be the same as a year before and something like that, and then it's clearly not, and it kind of just gets you behind.
Well, and this is something that feeds into college basketball. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but you know, you and I were talking kind of about why you're off to a slower start for college basketball, and there was a pretty substantial rule change with the three-point line getting moved back. You mentioned a couple of years ago, you know, when they changed the shot clock around, that was something that kind of threw you for a loop too. And the reason why I talk about this here as we're doing college football is because now we start looking ahead to next year. You're going to get teams that get that bowl bounce. You're going to be going through getting ready for those college football season win totals, those games of the year, all that type of thing. I never felt more prepared for a baseball season than I did for last year. After the guide, after the extra betting tips articles I did over at bangthebook.com, I never felt more prepared, and it didn't matter once the game started. So as we close up this college football season here, and next week we'll talk with all of our guests about, you know, what they did well, what they could have done better, what they'll try to take into next season. That's something that I don't think it's bad to start thinking about here as we watch these last couple of games that, you know, again, you can do all this prep work, you can do all this preparation, you can feel like that's when you have your greatest edges over the market, because you want to play on that uncertainty. Anytime you play in an uncertain market, whether it's a sports market, the stock market, something like that, there's always opportunities there to come out ahead. But it's just an opportunity. It's not a guarantee. So as we close up this college football season, some food for thought for everybody out there that, you know, again, as you get into your preparations for the next season, don't take anything for granted.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have clients ask me, or potential clients ask me all the time, you know, do you feel like you're ready for the season? I mean, how prepared are you? I want to buy in if you feel like you're ready to go this year. I never know how to answer that question. I mean, I'm always well prepared for the season, but it doesn't necessarily mean that my results are going to be as good as the last year or better than the last year, you know, that I'm going to, you know, be up X amount of units just because I was ready for it. It's not that easy. It doesn't go, it's not as easy to just predict the future as what some people think. So I think that's a good point. As far as the bowl games, I think that we might get some of these teams who won big in bowl games who are a bit overrated for next year. I kind of wonder if Texas might be again, based on, you know, blowing out Utah in that game. I know Utah was in a questionable spot, but it seems like Texas is the type of the team that, you know, all they have to do is win one game really big, and then the next year people are hyping them up quite a bit. So I wonder if Texas might be a bit overvalued again.
Yeah, I think that's one of them. And I wonder if a team like USC may be a little bit undervalued. I know that Nobody likes Clay Helton, and I fully understand the reasons why. And giving up almost a 50 burger to Iowa is not a good look at all. USC hasn't been that good defensively the last several years anyway. Give me Keaton Slovis. Give me that NFL talent at wide receiver. Another year of spring practice with Graham Harrell and all that. Maybe USC a little bit of an underrated commodity going into next season. And these are things that you want to take a look at here. And these are things that you want to take a look at with these two teams, Miami of Ohio and Louisiana. We finish up our live therapy session of the show here. Get into the Lightning Tree Bowl. Where Louisiana, anywhere from a 14 to 14 and a half point favorite. Some extra juice on the 14s. Total of 55 here for tonight's game. This used to be the Dollar General Bowl. Now the Lending Tree Bowl, still in Mobile. Any thoughts on this one?
I mean, are you pretty fired up about this game?
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to watch something on Hulu.
Right. You know, the other game that we're going to talk about is pretty exciting, and I am looking forward to that one. But this one, it's hard for me to get too many thoughts because, honestly, what I want to do here is I want to fade the MAC, but I can't fade the MAC and lay 14 or 14 and a half points here with Louisiana. It's just too much for me. No way I can get to that number. I just find this game very hard to bet. Like I say, this is one of those spots where I want to fade the MAC, but I can't do it based on the price. I think if I had to play something here, I'd probably take the over, assuming that Louisiana is going to score theirs and, you know, Miami's not going to be able to stall. They'll have to speed up their pace of play and hopefully they can get enough. But I will say that this is a very tough game to bet. There's no way I'm putting a dime on this game. Like I said, 14, 14 and a half, an expensive price, but I don't want to take Miami. I think Miami was a pretty fraudulent team throughout the year. So, the MAC just so weak. Louisiana, it's a team that's really well coached. I definitely would give them the coaching edge in this game. Louisiana, a team that has been consistent throughout the course of the season. You know, they haven't had very many really bad games. Miami, I mean, they almost lost to Akron. And, you and I know what that means. So Miami is just really not a very good team. You see what the public's doing here. 57% of the bets are on Louisiana. I honestly kind of figured it would be even more than that, and it might turn that way a little bit more as the game gets closer, because I don't think too many people have been, you know, placing a ton of bets on this game so far. But to me, tough game to bet. Don't really have any strong opinions here.
Yeah, neither do I. I mean, it's one of those scenarios where I think Louisiana can boat race them, and obviously they can put the game away running the football if they want. On the other hand, you know, Miami of Ohio, if they do get to play stall ball in the first half, limit possessions in this game, if they can move the chains a little bit, 14's a very big number, and 55's a big number for the total, too. This is the highest total for a Miami game this season. So, kind of speaks to what you're sort of looking for here from Louisiana. If I saw something more about Billy Napier maybe going to Mississippi State, which I think would be a decent hire, by the way, Then maybe I would be a little bit more inclined to kind of do something with this game, but hey, look, these two teams haven't played in, what, 6 weeks? Well, at least Miami of Ohio hasn't. Well, they were both in their conference championship games, but it's been 5-6 weeks since these two teams played. I have no idea what I'm going to get from either one of them here tonight. So a very easy pass there in the Lending Tree Bowl. Next Monday, though, we'll talk about this game more in depth on next Monday's segment, including a lot of player and game and team prop types of stuff, because as we talked about last week with Brent from DSI Sportsbook, this is effectively the Super Bowl of college football. So you get that full prop betting catalog out there. So we'll have a lot more to talk about with this game next week. But initial thoughts here on game 283-284, Clemson versus LSU, technically in a neutral setting in New Orleans. But we know the LSU faithful will be out in droves for this one.
Yeah, I mean, I am looking forward to this game. It should be a really good game. Clemson's won so many games in a row, and now they're the underdog.
Would tell you they've always been the underdog.
I was going to say, I kind of set that one up right there. Clemson's been the underdog for a long time now. Nobody thought that they can do it. Somehow they've done it, you know, against all odds. But here we are with Clemson and LSU. 76% of the bets on LSU, 80% of the money on LSU. I don't think that's probably going to change too much. I think that, you know, everybody just saw LSU blow out Clemson or blow out Oklahoma, and Clemson, you know, was fortunate to beat Ohio State. And then you get, you know, the betting odds, what they are. And it seems like the public doesn't really care that, you know, LSU is favored by 5.5 and they probably would have been an underdog in the past. you know, you and I were talking a little bit off air about this, that I don't think I've ever seen a reaction as big as this at the end of the season. You know, we know that things are going to change a lot earlier in the season, but to one game, this is quite the price move. And I think LSU probably two or two and a half point home field advantage here in this one, but there's no way I could get to 5.5. I can't take LSU. I think LSU has a good chance of winning the game. I do think this will be a close game. I can't lay 5 or 5.5 points here with LSU, because it just goes against my handicapping strategy. You know, I'm not going to take something that I could have gotten, you know, 6 or 7 points better before and lay those points now. I can't do that. On the other side, you know, Clemson, they are certainly going to use this, you know, us against the world mentality. And Dabo Sweeney, he's proven that he can get teams ready for games like this. If you're going to give a coaching edge to somebody, you have to give it to Clemson. My lean here would be Clemson plus the points if I had to take something, just because I think this will be a very close game. I also lean to the over. I wish the number wasn't so high. I mean, this is everybody was on top of the fact that the bookmakers knew that this should be a high number. Usually in a national title game, you know, you don't get a number this high because it clearly means a lot. I just find it kind of hard to figure out who's going to stop somebody in this game. LSU's defense has been somewhat susceptible throughout the course of the season. I think they've improved a bit here at the end of the year. And I don't see Clemson stopping LSU here. I mean, LSU's offense, a well-oiled machine. Burrow has been tremendous in this offense. And obviously the offensive coordinators have really been very good here. I think that this sets up to be a pretty high scoring game. I could see a shootout here in this one, a back and forth game that will certainly be fun to watch.
Yeah, it will be fun to watch. At least I'm hoping it'll be fun to watch. You know, obviously wishing Ohio State would have been in the game. Right. Dabo 10-1 straight up, 9-2 against the spread in bowl games and college football playoff games dating back to 2012. So been there, done that, very much on the Clemson side here for Dabo. And of course, you know, his coordinators who have been with him for quite some time, including Brent Venables, who really wound up being the key outside of Ohio State leaving a bunch of points on the field in the first half. He wound up being the key to that game because Clemson changed their defensive fronts, made it a little bit harder. The loss of J.K. Dobbins made it harder for Ohio State to move the football. So Brent Venables, really the MVP, I think, of that college football playoff semifinal. That being said, I mean, Ed Orgeron's been pretty good against top five opponents in his day here as the LSU head coach. I think maybe their coaching staff may end up a little bit disrespected here going into this one. At the same time, this adjustment is substantial. I mean, you and I were talking before we came on the air here. Both of us in our power ratings, Clemson a favorite on a neutral. Obviously, this game is probably pick 'em or so with it being in New Orleans, if we could have predicted that this would have been the national championship game. But still on a neutral, Clemson maybe 2.5, 3, 3.5 points better than LSU at the tail end of the year if they were playing in, you know, Texas or something like that. So this is a massive reaction to what we saw. Now, you do have to give LSU credit. I mean, it was dominant what they did to Oklahoma. Oklahoma wasn't that elite of a team. I mean, were they the fourth best team in the nation? I don't think so. You know, Alabama's the fourth best team in the country. You know, so Oklahoma's maybe fifth or sixth. Is the drop-off that big? It very well could be. And, I mean, we very, you know, much saw that play out there in the semifinal. Georgia's offense isn't any good. Statistically, they're fine, but they're not on LSU's level. They're not on Ohio State or Clemson's level offensively. So what do we really know about this LSU defense? I'm kind of interested in figuring that out here in this game, which is why, like you, it would be the over for me. It would be a lean on Clemson. If I get a 6, 6.5, I may end up taking it. But again, the player props and the team props going to give us so many more opportunities for this game.
Yeah, one more thing I want to note is that both of these offenses have been really explosive. 43 plays of 30 yards or more so far this year for Clemson, 49 plays of 30 yards or more for LSU. LSU has really struggled to stop those big plays. They've given up 28 plays of 30 yards or more. Clemson's given up 19, though I think it's only fair to say that Clemson clearly played a much weaker schedule than did LSU. So I think, you know, while Clemson's defense is good, they're certainly not as good as their stats. The big positive for them, like you said, is they have Brent Venables, you know, tremendous defensive mind.
All right. Anything else on college football you want to talk about, or should we transition over to the college basketball side here?
Yeah, I mean, just it's been a solid college football season for me, and I hate to see it end, like I said, in some ways. But at the same time, you know, it's a really busy time of the year, so it's nice to get a bit of a break. And I would say that by, what, you know, maybe May or June, I'll be pretty excited for college football coming back.
Now, something else to mention here real quickly is that, you know, obviously you're on a lot of different sites, you're monitored at a lot of different sites, but when it comes to the player prop stuff, you know, that can't really be graded on a lot of these sites. They don't really have the interface for it. So I presume you'll talk about a lot of your prop betting stuff once those lines actually get released over at bettersportspicks.com.
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, first half stuff, you know, first quarter, in-game stuff, that's where I'm going to put things like that. And, you know, I have done well, especially on props and season win totals, things like that. I'll be posting those over at bettersportspicks.com. You can go over there. You can sign up for the free newsletter there, and you can register for the free members area. There's going to be plenty of free information coming at that site.
All right, so with that, we transition over to the college basketball side of things here. And you know, look, I mean, doing so much with the bowl games here throughout the month of December, we've got a lot of catching up to do on the college basketball side with our listeners. And, you know, obviously after next week's show, once we get to January 20th, it'll be all college basketball for us here on this segment. So we'll have plenty of time to get you caught up on our handicapping the hardwood segments. But yeah, we've been trying to do as much as we can here with college hoops, conference play now going for everybody. We've got regression candidates. We've got fade and follow teams. We've got some strength of schedule discrepancies, stuff like that. We'll hit on all those types of things here over the next several weeks, looking ahead to conference tournaments and, of course, then March Madness and the other postseason tournaments, which generally have more value than the NCAA tournament itself. But we start here with some regression candidates, and we start in the SEC with the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Yeah, Arkansas, I think you have to say that they've been better than expected so far this year. They're 12-1. Musselman's a really good coach. They're only giving up 22.3% on three-pointers, which really is hard to fathom 13 games into the year. You know, they have clearly played some weaker offenses. You know, not the worst schedule ever, but not a great schedule. I think this team will be good at defending three-point shot. I don't think they're ever going to be able to keep 22% going. So if you look at second best team in that, it's 24.9% from three-point range. So, I mean, you're talking a pretty big gap here for there being 353 teams. This is going to regress. The other thing is Arkansas is really pushing the pace here. You're going to have some low numbers with Arkansas games based on the fact that their defense has been so good so far this year. But a team that's playing as fast as them, doing quite a bit of full court pressure, I would definitely lean toward Arkansas overs coming up. I think there's going to be some pretty low numbers that maybe you could take advantage of. Also, I would probably lean going against Arkansas just based on the fact that I imagine that will regress a decent amount on defense.
Well, and you mentioned teams that, you know, are allegedly doing very well defensively from the three-point line. It may just be that maybe they've played teams that can't shoot the basketball particularly well. West Virginia tonight is that team that's second in the country, allowing 24.9% from three. Wrote up a preview over at bangthebook.com for tonight's West Virginia and Oklahoma State game. Oklahoma State maybe not the team to take full advantage of that. But you can be damn well sure that some teams in the Big 12 will.
Yeah, I would say Oklahoma State, not really the team that you would expect to take advantage of that the most. Definitely teams in the Big 12 will, though. And I think the Big 12 is going to be a really good conference this year. A lot of depth in that conference. It's a fun conference where, you know, you don't have any free wins. So I think that'll be a good one for us to talk about throughout the course of the season. You know, some of the teams that have actually been up there pretty high in the standings in the past aren't quite as good as they have been. I think specifically of a Kansas State. But even them, it's not like it's a free win. So there's a lot of good teams in the Big 12. West Virginia has been a lot better than most people would have thought so far this year. And they have played a tough schedule. So Huggins is just doing a good job with this group. They nearly won there at Kansas the other day. They really had a chance. I wonder how they'll play with a quick turnaround going to Oklahoma State right away. I think this is a pretty good test for them because, you know, like I said, they really did have a chance to beat Kansas in that game. So can they come back with a good effort only 2 days later?
especially with an Oklahoma State team that got beat by 35 against Texas Tech over the weekend. So, you know, Oklahoma State, certainly plenty of incentive for them to bounce back. Like I said, that preview over at bangthebook.com. And by the way, money coming in pretty heavily on Oklahoma State tonight. That line down from 2 to as low as pick 'em out there in the marketplace. But back to the regression candidates here. I don't know what's up with you, man, but another week, another Ivy League mention here.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, maybe I should stop talking about the Ivy League and maybe my results will get better. Now, I'm obviously that doesn't have anything to do with it, but you know, Dartmouth opponents are shooting 58.5% from the free throw line. They've played 15 games and opponents are shooting 58.5% from the free throw line. It's unbelievable. I mean, that one really stunned me. And the fact that you could have played that many teams and they're shooting that percentage, obviously very lucky. I think overs could have some value in Dartmouth games coming up. They're going to have some really low totals. It's evident, though, that Dartmouth has sped up in their recent games. And these are things that I have had success in the past looking for is recent tempo changes. And let's see if they keep that going in the Ivy League or if there are quite a few teams in the Ivy League that play slowly. So I don't know if Dartmouth will continue their pace of play getting quicker as it has recently or if they'll just kind of go back into that stall ball. But I do think that Dartmouth overs could have some value. You're going to get some numbers in the, you know, 120s or low 130s with Dartmouth. And somebody's going to start making some free throws against this team at some point.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent one. And in particular, too, you know, you talk about that back-to-back that you get in the Ivy League where, you know, maybe you may not have the legs on the defensive end. And by the way, not only the 58.5% that opponents are shooting, they are 329th in the country themselves at 63.2% at the free throw line. So any sort of positive regression with those free points there, definitely something you want to keep an eye on for Dartmouth. And something else, just to give our listeners a really good resource, over at barttorvik.com. And again, we talk all the time about Bart Torvik. We sing the praises of that website on every single show here. He's got charts where you can sort of see the trend lines of these teams. Yeah. When you go to the specific team pages, one of them is pace. So you can see if a team has made a pace change. This is also really beneficial if you talk about injury situations where maybe a big man goes out and you wonder, okay, how is this team going to adjust? Well, if you don't have to worry about your 7-footer running the floor anymore, maybe they play faster with a small ball lineup, something like that. You can see that over at Torvik's website on those team pages. Really, really good resource for everybody out there.
I think that's my single favorite thing on that site. And it is a very good site. I think being able to see that, you know, the trend line is very helpful. I mean, and you can see where there's maybe an aberration and then where there becomes, you know, hey, this looks like it's really a true trend. It's something to keep in mind. You can do that with pace. You can do that with a lot of other things, you know, rebounding, different things like that. It's definitely something to keep an eye on. And it's something where you can get an edge on those recent games. Like I actually try to be pretty heavily looking at recency because things change in college basketball. Teams don't stay the same from game 1 to game 30 something. You know, these teams are going to be different. Like you said, there's going to be injuries. Some teams, they're just not very good at playing really fast. So they decide, you know, let's slow it down. Or maybe they're not having any success slowing it down. So they try to speed up. Look for those kind of changes. It's certainly very helpful.
You know, and I think that's another thing too. We talk about, again, you know, New Year's betting resolutions going into 2020. Because of my sabermetrics background in baseball, I'm a sample size guy. You know, I need big sample sizes of statistics. Well, in a lot of these sports, and maybe the Titans are a perfect example of this, where if you look at their full body of work, it's not as impressive as their recent body of work because you've got the 5 Marcus Mariota, or the 6 Marcus Mariota starts early on in the year. When Tannehill took over, their offense was dramatically different. And that's something that I have a really hard time adjusting to because it's just not my philosophy. But in college basketball, in the NBA, in the NHL, some of those recent developments do carry a lot more weight. So that's something I need to do a better job of here this year. And, you know, having resources like this can definitely be a big help, but I think that's something that maybe a lot of people end up struggling with is, you know, oh, this team has X for yards per play over the course of the season. Yeah. But you've got to really break that down and see if the offense sucks now and was really good in the non-conference or something like that. That stuff's really, really important. And sometimes I feel like there aren't enough hours in the day for me to follow it. But you know, if I want my handicapping to improve, that's something I do feel like I need to prioritize.
Yeah, I think that, you know, sample size is still really important in baseball. And like you said, the other sports are a little bit different. You know, you look at college basketball, if you're playing a certain way for 12 games and you just totally decide to change your style of play, nothing's the same as what it was before. And now for 3 games, you've played totally differently. Those first 12 games mean nothing. It doesn't matter anymore. So, you know, as bettors, that's something to keep in mind. If you see some big change, if you read from a beat writer that they've decided they're going to start playing a zone defense instead of man-to-man, or they're going to press when they haven't been pressing, those first games where they didn't do that don't make any difference anymore. So I think that's certainly a good point.
All right. I want to take a look here. I don't know if I would call them regression candidates, but I've got a question for you here, Kyle. What do these teams have in common? St. John's, Washington, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Texas A&M, Bowling Green, USF, Arizona, Wichita State, Fordham, Stanford, and Texas Tech. What do those 12 teams have in common?
Wow, I don't know. You threw me off when you put Fordham in the middle of it. I don't know. I mean, I assume that's something about good defense and bad offense. I don't know what it is.
All 12 of those teams have played one true road game.
One true. Okay.
So far this season. And this is an angle I played. I took Marquette over the weekend against Villanova. Villanova had only played realistically one true road game. It was at Ohio State. They got beat by 25. Their other true road game was against St. Joseph's, part of the Big Five where they play all those Philadelphia teams. So they didn't even have to leave their home city. That Marquette game was, to me, their second true road game of the season. 0.83 points per possession, second lowest output of the year. Their lowest output of the year, the game at Ohio State, second game of the year, 0.797 points per possession. So this is something you want to absolutely take a look at here in conference play. These teams that haven't played a lot of true road games, those 12, once again, St. John's, Washington, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, A&M, Bowling Green, USF, Arizona, Wichita State, who we'll talk about here in a couple of minutes, Fordham, Stanford, and Texas Tech. That's an important thing here at this time of the year, especially because home court advantages go back to normal now that winter break is mostly over.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to single out the one team that really stood out to me when you said that is Fordham. They've played the 352nd strength of schedule, so only one team has played a weaker schedule than them. They're 6-8 so far this year, but they're a lot worse than that. And they're about to play two road games here at St. Bonnie and then Duquesne. I think Fordham could be a good fade coming up. So it's almost like I'll add one to the follow fade section here, and I think Fordham could be a good fade. So you kind of brought up a team that I think really does stand out.
I was trying to count them as you were talking there. There were just too many, but I believe there are about 30 teams that have only played two true road games so far. And we're talking about Florida, who plays at South Carolina Tuesday night. We'll talk about that game in a few minutes. Louisville, Penn State, Ohio State. They're on the road at Maryland and at Indiana here coming up, and they're not playing particularly well right now. Auburn, how about Hawaii? Only two true road games for Hawaii. So when they get into conference play here in the Big West, they come to the mainland. That could be difficult for them. Michigan State, Kansas, LSU. You've got some really big names here that just haven't played a lot of true road games. Now, maybe they've played neutral site tournaments and stuff like that, so they have played away from home, but a true road game and a neutral site are a hell of a lot different.
Yeah, they're very different, and Hawaii is one that certainly stands out as a team that they've usually struggled coming to the mainland. And really, they have played all home games. It's not been neutral site games. They've played the road game at Illinois, the road game at Oregon.
They didn't fare well. Both of them.
Right. They didn't fare well at all in those games. And I wouldn't expect them to be covering numbers very consistently on the road here. So definitely would lean against Hawaii. And I think that's a really good point that you made, that being this deep into the season, some of the teams, you know, playing like 15 games, 14 games, and if you've only played one or two as a true road game, and now you're going to go into an environment that's a very difficult one in conference play where home court advantage does mean more than what it has here in the past few weeks, I think that's a great point.
And again, I mean, these aren't just blind plays by any means, but right. You know, for example, take a look at a team like Santa Clara, right? They've played two true road games. They're out there in the West Coast Conference. They are 327th in effective field goal percentage on offense, 330th in effective field goal percentage on defense. They are 341st in the country at 20% shooting threes. Is that going to get better when they go play on the road in a setting that they're not accustomed to? Highly unlikely. So you can go through, sort this again over on Torvik's website on the team stats page, sort by venue away. Again, it's not an automatic play, but if you've got a team that's really good offensively and they haven't played away from home, they're probably going to struggle. If you've got a team that's really bad offensively, it's probably not going to get better on the road. So again, starting points to where you get something that looks like an angle you can take advantage of, and then you deep dive into the handicap from there.
Agree. I think that, you know, just blindly going against teams that are in that situation is not really the way to go. First of all, there'd be a lot of bets. You know, do you really want to take that many? Second of all, you know, all these things are not equal. Some of these teams have veterans who have gone on the road many times in the past and have proven that they can win on the road. Some of these other teams haven't. So, you know, individually handicap these games, certainly.
All right. So with that, we take a look at some fade and follow teams here. And once again, man, maybe you have a fever or something, but another Ivy League mention.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I feel fine. I don't know. It's very strange. You know, Ivy League is not something that I bet very much. And I will say, I think that our Ivy League chatter is going to back down pretty quickly because we're about to go into the Ivy League season where they play Friday, Saturday. You know, I think those are tough games to bet. I will say, I think Yale at this point could be a good fade. I like Yale. I think Yale's a good team, a well-coached team, but they're 12-2 ATS. Extreme success there in the non-conference. I think their prices are going to be a bit too high now. I don't see this Yale team as one that's just going to blow everybody out in the Ivy League. And they're going to be laying double digits here pretty often in the Ivy League. There's some weak teams here, certainly with, you know, Brown and Columbia and Cornell. I just don't think that Yale is going to consistently blow out those teams in these strange spots. So I think that taking the double digit points going against Yale could make some sense for a while.
All right. So obviously we have to look at the opposite side of the spectrum here with a follow team. And this one's from a bigger conference.
Yeah, you know, I think Iowa State, I know that we have talked about this in the past, and I remember you and Brad Powers talking about this in college football, that, you know, these teams who lose to somebody that's, you know, just terrible, a Division II team or somebody that's a no-name team, Iowa State lost to Florida A&M, and they lost to them at home, which, you know, that's hard to imagine. They've got a great home court advantage. And yes, I know Tyrese Halliburton didn't play in that game, but I don't think that really matters. It's hard for me to imagine that they lost that game at home to Florida A&M. But you remember that we talked about a few weeks ago, there's going to be some huge upsets that nobody ever expects because the home court advantage is just not there. This was a great example of that. So that was something that, you know, we hit the nail on the head on that one. But Iowa State is a team to me that they come off that loss, then they lose in overtime to TCU. Not a bad performance there in that game. Now Iowa State has got to be rated pretty lowly, and I would imagine that the public would not be wanting to bet them. I think Iowa State is probably going to have some value, especially in some of their home games coming up, because they do have a really good home court advantage. To me, I think Iowa State could be a good team to back.
Yeah, I think that one makes some sense here, and Iowa State winds up playing Kansas here this week. Kansas, one of those teams, only two true road games. They lost at Louisville by a point, then beat Stanford, played very well defensively against Stanford with an 8-day layoff, though, to go cross country. But now they get that away game at Hilton Coliseum, which we know the Big 12, big home road dichotomy in that conference year in and year out. So Iowa State probably will pick off somebody at home here and will probably do so in pretty short order. So we'll continue applying some of these concepts here and break down a slew of games to finish out the show. And one that I wanted to talk about specifically here on Tuesday night, Florida and South Carolina, is a very interesting game to me. We've talked a lot about how Florida has been a very big disappointment so far this season. They just needed double overtime at home to beat Alabama over the weekend. They lost to Utah State, got beat handily by Butler. losses also to UConn and Florida State. South Carolina, they beat Virginia on December 20th. They beat Virginia. They scored 70 points against Virginia. Then lost at home to Stetson. Now they open conference play against Florida. These are tricky handicaps. I think this is something that's maybe tripped you up a little bit here during the college basketball season, is that there seems like on a team-by-team basis, there are just wild swings. You'll get a good performance, and then you'll get whatever we want to call this South Carolina thing against Stetson.
Yeah, I mean, everything's been tripping me up here lately, no doubt about that. And, you know, I'm always honest about how I've been doing. And obviously the haters have had it had a field day here with me lately. And I'm pretty sure that things will improve. And, you know, over the long term, I've done really well. But I do think there's been some really strange things going on in college basketball. And the rule change is always a difficult thing because you don't know exactly how that'll work. But I think Florida, a team that, if you look at that trends thing on Bart Torvik for Pace, you're going to see that Florida has played way faster in their last two games. I mean, just way, way faster. Now, it's been against Long Beach State and Alabama. So is this something that's changing from Florida, or is this something that they just decided to play what style their opponent was playing? I do think it's really interesting that in their game against Alabama, according to KenPom, they were only using 15.6 seconds of the shot clock on average, and that's 2 seconds less than what they have for the year overall. So either Florida decided, let's just go ahead and play Alabama style, or Florida wants to play quicker. South Carolina likes to play fast as well. They're just not very good at offense, and they're really efficient on defense. I think that this, I would lean over in this game. I think that if both teams continue to play quickly, as they have been recently, you're going to get a pretty low total in this game. Florida is certainly more talented than South Carolina. There's no doubt about that. Florida is a team that, though, I can't bet them, especially as a favorite here. They're definitely going to be favored in this game. I don't know what I'm going to get from Florida. I think Florida has a high upside, but not consistent. I want to see something out of them before I want to bet them on the side.
Well, and something else to consider here, you know, now that we're in a conference play, we're going to have a lot of lines in the fouling range. South Carolina, 345th in the country at the free throw line, 60.3%. They also can't make a three to save their lives. So keep that in mind here, too. As you mentioned, Florida going to be the favorite here in this game. But if you've got teams that can't make their free throws and they're in that, you know, 5 to 7, 5 to 8 point range, even 4 to 8, I guess I would say, those are dicey situations for some of those teams that really can't do much at the free throw line. A game that you mentioned here, we kind of got a little bit of a, not a 50-50 split per se, but you and I both kind of looking at some different games here this week. Utah State and Air Force is one on Tuesday night that kind of caught your eye.
Yeah, Utah State had this huge game at home against San Diego State on Saturday night, and that game was really built up. I think that was a tremendous performance from San Diego State. I had the under in that game, and I was really surprised that San Diego State's offense looked that good. You know, Utah State's a good defensive team. San Diego State, a really good defensive team. But, you know, the offense has worked a little bit better than I thought they would in that game. Utah State really had put a lot into that game. They had just lost 70-53 to UNLV, a really disappointing showing. They come home. Utah State was favored in that game against San Diego State, I'm pretty sure. And, you know, that's one of those spots where maybe people got a little bit too cute and just thought, you know, oh, okay, we got to go against San Diego State. The odds makers know what they're doing here. You know, like I said, I lost on the under, so it's not like I did anything right in that game either. But I think that based on their body of work, you know, San Diego State has shown that they're better than Utah State. So it was one of those spots where I think that people might have got a little bit ahead of themselves on the side. I do think that Utah State here in this one is the better team than Air Force. But I think this is a really tough spot. You know, are they going to try to bounce back after that loss? It's a quick turnaround, a pretty quick turnaround at least. Air Force is a good enough team to where they can beat somebody at home. And they will pick off somebody who's pretty good. Air Force is better than they've been in recent seasons. They've been very efficient on offense. They're third in effective field goal percentage offense, according to KenPom. I wouldn't want to bet Utah State in this game. I would probably lean either over or Air Force in this game. But I think it's an interesting game where we're going to learn a lot about Utah State. You know, is Utah State going to take a step back this season, or are they going to be for real again? They had a really nice season last year, but this is the type of game that they need to bounce back and win here. And let's see how they look in this one.
I'll be real interested to see this too, because Utah State, I mean, they really haven't been as good defensively as they were last year. I know they've still been okay, giving up the 77 to San Diego State, not a great look. Air Force, second in the country in three-point percentage, and they are atrocious in just about every category on defense. So this thing could be a shootout, maybe, if Air Force is making their shots. The thing for Utah State is this. At this point in time, I don't think there's any chance that they get an at-large berth. I mean, they've got one game left against a top 10 opponent. That's the rematch against San Diego State on the road. They've already lost to St. Mary's, lost to BYU, did beat Florida and LSU, so maybe there's a chance, but their margin for error is very, very slim now. And you wonder about that with some of these teams that maybe they use this time to kind of figure things out and try to roll into March and win the conference tournament. Now, maybe that doesn't resonate down to the players. The coach has to be thinking it now at this point in time. But that's always something I kind of look at here with these top teams in the conference is that I don't think they're an auto bid team now. I don't think they're an at-large bid team now. They probably have to win this conference, which means you take these games in January to figure out what the hell you're doing wrong. And sometimes you may get tripped up if that's what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, I think that they would have to have a really impressive record at this point to get in the tournament without, you know, beating somebody like San Diego State on the road. Like you said, there's not really a bunch of top teams to play here in this conference. The Mountain West is certainly weaker than it was a few years ago. So Utah State is going to have a good record. I imagine that, I mean, they're going to win 20 some games here, but you know, that might not mean as much this year as it did in past seasons. So let's see how Utah State looks here. I would lean toward the over. I would also lean Air Force. This is one of those games where I could see quite a bit of different outcomes possibly happening. So, you know, if you bet Air Force, I think you probably want to bet something on the money line, at least some, because there's certainly a chance they pull the upset here.
All right, so let's go to a couple of SoCon games here on Wednesday. One of these we matched up on when we were kind of comparing notes before the show. One of them we didn't, and we'll start with the one that you pointed out here, Western Carolina and VMI. Western Carolina, not a team a whole lot of people are going to know. They've lost three games on the season. Georgia, Florida State by five on the road. And they were pretty competitive against Xavier on the road as well. They've won all their games otherwise, albeit against a pretty weak schedule. What stands out about this game to you?
Well, here's my premium look ahead for listeners. I'm almost sure I'll play the over in this game. Western Carolina has really impressed me on offense. I think Mark Prosser is doing a really good job with this team. You know, this is a Western Carolina team that a couple years ago didn't have anything going right for them. I mean, they were 13-19. Last year, they go 7-25. And here they are 10-3. Now, clearly, they haven't played a very good schedule, and they're not as good as their record looks at this point. But this is a much improved team. And even last year, you could see that their offense was getting quite a bit better. It was just defense that was a problem. And now this year, they've decided to play a lot quicker, about three possessions per game more than what they had last year. They're still weak on defense. I think they'll look even worse on defense in this conference, because if you look at their strength of schedule so far this year, they've played a lot of really weak offenses so far this year. VMI, the one that really stands out to me, is that this is one of those recency things. They have clearly played much quicker in their last few games. This was a team that I was kind of, as I was going down looking for recency changes, VMI really stood out to me. So I wanted to point this one out, and it kind of works out pretty well, because we kind of talked about that that's something that you should really look for. I think this total is going to be too low here. I think this is a game that there's a lot of scoring here. VMI slowed the game down a little bit earlier this year. It didn't work. You know, they weren't winning anyways, you know. So now they go back to what they did before and play a little faster. They're very weak on defense. Both of these teams can shoot it pretty well, especially from three-point range. I think this is a high-scoring game.
Yeah, VMI, second in the country in three-point rate, 51.5%, and they're 41st in making them at almost 37%. So definitely the chance here for a very, very high-scoring game in the SoCon. But the game of the night in the SoCon, East Tennessee State and UNC Greensboro, both of us isolating this game. We love to talk about some under-the-radar types of matchups. I don't know if I'd even call this one under the radar, because these two teams have kind of gotten a little bit of national run over the last few years, but this is a great one in the SoCon.
Yeah, and the SoCon is really good. I mean, I don't know how many people realize how good the SoCon is at this point. So it's fun to talk about this conference. They got some good teams at the top of the conference. Certainly there's some weak teams lower on, lower down there with VMI and Citadel and teams like that. But, you know, I think the top of the SoCon is very good. East Tennessee State is a really well-coached team. I really like Steve Forbes. Think he's a very good coach. Consistently, they've been a very good team. UNC Greensboro, Wes Miller's done a great job with this team. Both of these teams are consistently good. They've really raised their program over the last few years. These two teams really have good games when they play each other. And I would imagine the same thing will happen again here. I think this one's even more interesting because UNC Greensboro coming off a double overtime loss to Wofford. You know, what do they do after that loss? Well, East Tennessee State is coming off a loss to Furman. And the game before that, they beat Wofford by 1 point, 49-48. The tempo will be really slow in this one. I would lean to the under. I would kind of hope that this would be 130 or higher. You know, we might get a 128 or 128.5. And I don't know if I'd play the under at that price. But I do think that Greensboro is probably, you know, the team who has been more consistently good in the last, you know, several games. They had this loss to Wofford. I think Wofford's just a good team again this year. But the fact that Greensboro was able to go on the road and beat Vermont told me quite a bit about this team. Greensboro is going to be favored here. I imagine this will be a very tight game. I'm not sure if I'm going to bet this one, but, you know, honestly, Wednesday night, I think this is the best game.
You know, and I think it's interesting, too, and I did kind of touch on both of these teams in my situational spots article over at bangthebook.com, because you've got Greensboro playing Wofford, East Tennessee State, and then Furman on the road on Saturday after that game against ETSU. So that's a little bit of a tough spot. Meanwhile, ETSU, Wofford, Furman on the road, Greensboro on the road, then home games in a big favorite role against VMI and Samford. There could be some situational spots in the SoCon here because you get up to play these teams that are kind of on your level in this conference, and then you play teams that are really bad, and you're a really big favorite in that role. Could be a good conference to isolate some situational spots as we go along here.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Let's look back at what East Tennessee State did last year as a good example. East Tennessee State goes to play Wofford, loses in overtime, loses to Furman on the road, and then they come home as a big favorite and barely beat Citadel. A tough spot there. And then earlier in the year, they beat Mercer on the road in overtime. And the next game, they were a huge favorite against VMI and only won by 3 points. So certainly, I think that's a great point.
All right, so let's take a look here at Thursday night real quick. And, you know, as I mentioned, Wichita State, one of those 12 teams that's only played one road game, but they're at home here hosting Memphis. Big, big, big game in the AAC coming up here on Thursday night. Hey, thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I like Wichita State as a team, very good defensive team, 15th in the nation in defensive efficiency so far this year. Wichita State hasn't played a very good schedule, though. 256 strength of schedule, according to KenPom. Memphis, though, 262nd. I think Memphis is probably a bit overvalued by some people at this point. People like to, you know, root for Memphis. Penny Hardaway is their coach. They certainly recruit well. I think that the jury is still a bit out as far as whether Memphis is a really good team or not. You know, they had that nice win on the road against Tennessee, but Tennessee has not been very good at all lately. So I don't know how much that means. Memphis coming off the loss to Georgia makes this an interesting spot, too. I would lean Wichita State in this game. I think Wichita State, when they go on the road, you might have some good chances to go against them. But if I were taking a side here, I would lean toward Wichita State.
Yeah, again, I think this one's so interesting. And again, I mentioned my situational article. You get up for this big game against Memphis on Thursday night, then you go on the road to UConn Sunday. That may be a really tough spot for Wichita State there. Again, would be only their second true road game. Their other true road game at Oklahoma State, so really not that far away. UConn and Temple with a little bit of a roadie here Sunday and then Wednesday of next week. So we'll see what happens to Wichita State here in this one. If they win this game convincingly, maybe a good opportunity to go against them on Sunday in that game against UConn. One more game to hit on real quickly here as we go all the way ahead to Saturday. Ohio State and Indiana. The Buckeyes playing at Maryland on Tuesday night, at Indiana on Saturday. Tough little stretch here for a Buckeyes team, missing a key piece in Kyle Young and, you know, really not playing as well as they did earlier on in the year.
Yeah, I think Ohio State got a bit overvalued after their early success. And if you look back now, Cincinnati is not very good. Cincinnati just lost to Tulane. Cincinnati, they have some chemistry problems. Something's wrong with that Bearcats team, certainly. UNC win also is not as impressive for Ohio State because North Carolina has not been very good. So I think Ohio State may have been overvalued because they beat some teams who we thought were better than what they are. Obviously, their win against Villanova was really impressive. I think Ohio State's a good team. I don't think that, you know, they're a top three or four team as they were rated there for a while. I think they're probably still a bit overvalued by some people. I see Ken Pom has them at fourth. I don't think this Buckeyes team is a top four team. I'm clearly a big Buckeyes fan, and I hope I'm wrong, but I think Ohio State has too many weaknesses. Their big weakness that really stands out if you watch enough of their games, they really struggle with turnovers. They can't keep turning it over this often and beating good teams. Indiana, to me, would be the side I would take in this game if I were taking a side. You know, Indiana's going to be getting points here. Let's see how they play in the game before that. I would hope that Indiana doesn't look too great against Northwestern, and maybe Ohio State has a good performance against Maryland. If so, maybe we get 5 points or something like that on Indiana. I think this is a really close game. I don't think Ohio State's going to blow out Indiana. I think this Indiana team is quite a bit improved. Obviously, they've been a bit inconsistent as well. They had that bad loss at home to Arkansas. Then they lost to Maryland on the road. Indiana, 11-3, they've kind of stumbled here a bit of late, but same thing for Ohio State. So both of these teams have kind of looked really good and then struggled here of late. I think I would grab the points with Indiana if I were taking a side here.
A lot of games and a lot of opportunities here this week in college basketball, to say the least. Kyle Hunter, you can find his work over at huntersportspicks.com. And, you know, again, like we said, I mean, it's been a little bit of a struggle of late, but long term, you've been very, very strong in this business. And I'm certainly looking forward to you bouncing back.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, one of the things is I like to talk about it sometimes when I do poorly, because I want people to know that, you know, when I say something, you can tell that, you know, I'm telling you the truth. You know, I'm not going to be one of these guys that's going to just tell you only when I'm doing well. You know, I'm going to be honest both ways. And, you know, like I said, I've been really frustrated with how things have gone of late. But if you look at the long run, I've been very good, you know, in all sports and specifically in college basketball. If you go back to 2010, I'm up 186 units just overall. So, yeah, certainly the long run has been good. I hate it for the people who bought in recently that have gotten the bad stretch. But, you know, I'll be giving out more free information. You sign up for the free picks newsletter at huntersportspicks.com. or the free area over at bettersportspicks.com as well. So plenty of free information coming, and I would imagine that things will turn around.
Well, and of course, as always, make sure you follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle Hunter Picks. Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com and bettersportspicks.com, the two sites. Appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks. Take care.
There you go. Once again, Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com. at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of the program, we'll chat NFL playoffs, NHL, and this week's Sony Open out in Hawaii with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Should be a lot of fun on tomorrow's show. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.